our mouth the meditations of all our hearts, be acceptable to thee, O Lord, our strength and redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. When my children, Rachel and James, were very, very little, we talked one day about fishing. I'd never been fishing, but talking about fishing got them real excited. And so they decided they wanted to go fishing. So I promised them I would take them to go fishing that following Saturday. But first of all, we had to go off to Walmart. And Rachel called Walmart Wally World. So we went off to Wally World and got a couple of junior fishing kits and got them all kitted out for our fishing trip. I promised them we'd go fishing, and on Saturday we got up and by golly we went fishing. But both Rachel and James caught some fish. And then we had to decide what were we going to do with the fish. Are we going to keep the fish or not? Well, Rachel, bless her heart, wanted to keep them as pets. But James was much more realistic and said, let's eat them. But we had to make a decision whether or not to keep the fish. In that one outing on that Saturday morning, the word keep had two different meanings for us. The first meaning was for me to keep my promise. The second meaning was, do we keep the fish? The first meaning had to do with a commitment that was made. The second meaning has to do with a possession. In the gospel reading this morning, Jesus uses the word keep. And I believe that his use of the word has a lot to do with a commitment and not a possession. You see, keep, gospel, is a commitment word. Commitment. We keep a promise. We keep our word. We keep making our mortgage payments and insurance payments and payments on a car. Whenever I do a marriage service, I ask the couple, will you keep each other in sickness and in health and forsaking all others, be faithful to each other as long as you both shall live? The word keep is also very important in our faith. Because it seems that this morning Jesus hinges discipleship on this word keep. Those who love me, keep my words. Whoever does not love me, does not keep my words. It's pretty simple. It's not a question of do the best you can, or just try to keep it as much as possible. It's keep it, forget it. And to keep it means a commitment. A commitment. But you know something? Commitments can be so dull. Because when we make a commitment, by golly, we're in the mood for that commitment, and it's the right thing to do. But you know something? Long after that mood has gone, the commitment still remains. And you know, this is so true of our faith. This commitment. You know, when Jesus told the parable about the soil and the soil, he wasn't giving us a class on Jewish agricultural conditions. He was talking about commitment. When that rich young ruler came up to Jesus and said, Lord, I want to follow you and I just love you and I'm going to be with you all the time. And Jesus turned around and said, but first, go away, go give away all you've got and then come follow me. It wasn't about his possessions. It was about where does his commitment lie? What Jesus wants of us is our commitment to him. A commitment to his teaching, a commitment to his way of life. A commitment to live a life to show others that we are committed. You know, there's a wonderful question, and I've asked it many times from this top pulpit. And the question is, if you were convicted as a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you? Oh, yeah. Oh. If you were convicted of being a Christian, would there be enough evidence to convict you? Because let's think of how many excuses we make for not practicing our Christianity, for not living our Christianity. How many excuses do we make for not worshipping? How many excuses do we make for not saying our daily prayers? How many excuses do we make for not living our life as Christ would have us live it? Because we come up with all kinds of excuses, don't we? And then just when we think we've heard them all, we surprise ourselves by coming up with another one. You know, in our state of Kentucky, when I think about commitment, I think about sports. Basketball and football. Because you know something? Sports fans are committed. And it doesn't matter how the team's doing, they are committed. Really committed. But you know what the weird thing is that out of these sports fans' mouths, I never hear the words, "I'm never going back." Because they give you my top 7 reasons why they say they're never going back. I'm never going back because every time I went, they asked for money. And you never hear, "I'm never going back," because the people I sat next to really weren't very friendly. And sports fans say, "I'm never going back," because those seats were too hard. What about, "I'm never going back," because, you know, I went to lots of games, but that coach never came to see me. "I'm never going back," because those referees made decisions I could not agree with. Oh, the game went into overtime and I was late for the restaurant. The organist played numbers I'd never heard before. And I don't like that kind of music. I've got other things to do. I suspect I was sitting next to some hypocrites, because you know what? They came to see their friends and they talked during the whole game. And my favourite one of all, I was taken to too many games by my parents when I was older. Sports fans make a commitment to follow a team. They make a commitment to attend the games. And they make a commitment to talk about the team. And they also wear all the paraphernalia that says which team they follow, because they've got a very outward love for that team. And their commitment is a commitment regardless of the hardships, regardless of the inconveniences, because they love the game and they love to be there. Does not Jesus ask the same kind of commitment from his disciples. Doesn't Jesus ask of us the same, if not a deeper love for him? Anyone who loves me, they will keep my words, and I will come to them, and I'll make a home with them. What sort of spiritual home do we have? To what and to whom are you really committed?